ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Take these books here. So basically, right now, just for a few days, and we'll do a summary of the first canto, and then the 19th chapter will finish, and we'll go on to the second canto. Okay, so then, chapters 1 through 3, questions by the sages, divinity and divine service, and Krishna is the source of all incarnations. Srimad Bhagavatam opens with three Mangalacharan verses composed by Srila Vyasadeva. The first verse, Janmadyasya Yataha, reveals the connection, sambandha of everything in creation to its source, the Supreme Brahman, Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. The second verse, Dharma Prayojita Kaitavotra, initiates glorification of the Bhagavatam alone among all scriptures. The dismissive term Kaitava Dharma, cheating religion, applies to the religious texts of a great many sectarian communities of the modern world, because, as His Divine Grace explains, quote, in the lower stages of human civilization, there is always a competition to lord it over the material nature. Or in other words, there is a continuous rivalry to satisfy the senses. Driven by such consciousness, man turns to religion. He thus performs pious activities or religious functions in order to gain something material. But if such material gains are obtainable in other ways, then so-called religion is neglected. This is the situation in modern civilization. Man is thriving economically, so at present he is not very interested in religion. Churches, mosques, or temples are now practically vacant. Men are more interested in factories, shops, and cinemas than in religious places, which were erected by their forefathers. Some of these are the books that I can see. This practically proves that religion is performed for some economic gains. Economic gains are needed for sense gratification. Often one is baffled in the pursuit of sense gratification. He takes to salvation and tries to become one with the Supreme Lord. Consequently, all these states are simply different types of sense gratification. You kind of need to share them a bit, you know? Keep them so that you can look together. In the Vedas, the above-mentioned four activities are prescribed in a regulative way so that there will not be any undue competition for sense gratification. But Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental to all these sense gratificatory activities. It is purely transcendental literature which can be understood only by the pure devotees of the Lord, who are transcendental to competitive sense gratification. In the material world, there is keen competition between animal and animal, man and man, community and community, nation and nation. But the devotees of the Lord rise above such competitions. They do not compete with the materialists because they are on the path back to Godhead, where life is eternal and blissful. Okay, so just means it's very important to understand this point because it's very relevant in our life, is that the conditioned soul needs things, right? And these things are material. And we actually have to come to grips with this. Much of the time we're actually in illusion. We are devotees, so that overshadows everything, right? Because in the examples given, if you have one candle, one small light in a huge room of darkness, you can see in the room. So unlimited, cubic meters of ignorance cannot stand against one candle. Does that make sense? That being said, it does not mean that you don't have to deal with that darkness. Right? It's not the focus. That's why we don't emphasize it. This is very important. The tendency is, if we emphasize spiritual, then material is unimportant and we neglect it, which is fine if we can do that. That's the best. Krishna recommends that as the first option. But if you can't, you have to recognize that ignorance exists and deal with it. If you don't deal with it, it will get you. It will catch you. You just have to look around in the community of people in their 50s when they're supposed to be retiring are getting married. People in their, you know, 40s and 50s when it's time to let go of family life are pulling it together and tightening it up. That's the time when we're supposed to let go of economics, and now we're starting up our serious and productive businesses. You just have to look around the community around you. You even have to just look at yourself. Right? So, what we're saying is the material side has to be recognized but seen in its place, which is secondary to spiritual life. So spiritual life takes precedent, but in those moments where we're not spiritually conscious, those material moments should be recognized and connected to Krishna. That's Bhagavad Dharma. Right? To connect them to Shastra, that's pious, but it's still cheating. Because Krishna is still not the goal. Our own sense gratification is the goal. Does that make sense? Right? So, but if getting Krishna is the goal of that material consciousness, then it's no longer Kaitava Dharma. It's no longer cheating. Right? Because if it's cheating, we throw it out. But the point is we're cheaters. Right? We can't in one breath say, oh, we're transcendental, we don't care for all this, but at the same time be totally engrossed in our material life. This creates serious social problems, which everybody can blatantly see if you just open your eyes. Right? So, what it means is maturity is required. You know, we say, oh, I've been devotee 20 years, 30 years, all this. Okay, so that means you must be some mature. There must be some maturity. So in that maturity, you should be able to look at, I have this material desire. Okay. It's just like, you have to recognize you have a head. Oh no, I got a head. Oh no. You know, cover all the mirrors, everything. No, 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 no head is there. No, I don't see any head. Sorry, do you see it? I don't see a head. I see arms, I see legs, I see no head. Forget it, no head. Right? But that's what we're doing. I'm a devotee, I have no material desires, but at the same time as think how much of your life you're endeavoring to fulfill material desires. Right? Think of it. So, that's not the problem, because as we pointed out before, devotional service is so powerful that 1 hour a day of serious Krishna consciousness will overpower 23 hours of material life. If that's your focus. If your focus is material life, I do a little Krishna consciousness, then it'll be slow. Right? Devotional service will catch you eventually. You're not going to get out of here. It means your material life's finished. So you might as well put that on the side. Like that, Krishna's tricked you. But if your focus is on that 1 hour, then those 23 hours will be connected to that. And then it will become 22, 21, 20, 19, until it becomes zero. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what Bhagavatam is trying to show us. If you look at it, what is in the Bhagavatam? Do we just see great sages who are standing on their head? No, we see grihasthas, and we see children, and we see in-house fighting between sisters, between wives, between husbands, between, you know, communities. Think about it. That's what's going on here. So, is that any different in our life? Right? You go in the temple. Right? Go ahead. Try to tell me that you don't check out and see if anyone's got a better sari than you, or a better kurta, or a better dhoti than you. Go ahead. think up some nice excuse that you can try to convince me you don't do that. Or at least don't notice. Oh, that's a nice, oh, this is good. Oh, what is who? What is who? Right? So that's this competition that they're talking about. Otherwise, why do you care? Right? Why do you care? Because that competitive spirit is there. So if we recognize it, then we can deal with it. In the beginning, we don't recognize it. Why? Because it is too important for us, and it will overpower us if we deal with it. So that's why in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, we put it on the side, shove it out of the way, and just go for as much as we can absorb ourselves in just straight Krishna consciousness. But as we mature, these things are there. So either we recognize them, connect them to Krishna, or don't recognize them, they're going to catch you anyway. And then you're going to find yourself out in the middle of nowhere, running some little, gathering somewhere. Right? Because you have to get down to the reality of life. Right? You understand? Gatherings weren't planned. Gatherings happened. You understand? Somebody had to go somewhere. They have to go somewhere to make money, take care of their family, educate their kids, this, that. Therefore, they're in that place. They're not there because, you know, before in, you know, the early 60s, it's like, hey, okay, where could we open another center? Hey, I got some friends in San Jose, like that, and something like that, and, you know, I could get up there and all that, and they go off with nothing to start a center. That's not what's happening. It's like, okay, you know, honey, we got to do this and that. We got to make some money, and I could go back to my job here or there. Or, you know, the kids are growing up now, and I don't want to go to school here. I want to go to school over there. So, here's your short sweet story. Yeah. Yeah, come on. I mean, if you like that better, yeah, we'll like move it over there. Huh?
Yeah, it's more like off the firing line.
Oh, well, I mean, if you prefer it, we can move you back over there or something like that. Right? Mm-hmm. Like that. Crosshairs go here. Right? Sorry. So then, like that. Then it's like, you know, we got to go there and get situated. It's a good place to raise the kids. It's a good place for money. It's a good place for blah, blah, whatever it is. And then while we're here, well, we're devotees and okay, so then we have a big living room. Well, we want to have a big living room. But, you know, having a big living room is a bit of a maya, so therefore we could have a gathering. Hari Bol. Okay, so then, does that make sense? Right? Even here in Mayapur, I know people with big living rooms that they say they're for gatherings. How often do they have them? But you feel good because it's not just for ourselves, it's for Krishna. That's the point. Why just the living room? Why don't you do that to every room in your house, every item in your house, every aspect of your life? Does that make sense? Then it's Bhagavat Dharma. Otherwise, then the tendency is you have Bhagavad Dharma, and then you have the other time. And then it's between, depending upon your proclivity, any combination of more modern, which is maybe nothing to do with pious activities, or more Vedic. You know? And everybody has their unique blend. You know? Vedic here, modern here.
Are you speaking on the first verse?
Yeah, down to here. What about second verse?
The second verse.
Yeah.
Okay, because you've just come to some practical points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, go ahead.
I need to address. I think you told students, I'm sure, that for this course, we're asking that you, if you become an enrolled student, either what we call full credit or partial credit. I don't... Was a distinction made at all?
I think we discussed it.
Yeah.
In other words, there's
full credit means that you're going to be reading along with us with the book. There's special homework assignments for you. You're expected to read the chapter along with the chapter summary guide that we're giving you, even here. Chapter, although this is mostly a summary of what we did last year, but there is the full chapter summary guide to chapter 19, which we partially did last year, but none of us remembers exactly where we left off. Only with the help of Shanti Parayan Prabhu did we have some approximation in our mind that we did go a certain distance, but then rather than be bewildered about that, we just decided to hold chapter again, which I'm sure you won't mind. So all we're asking for this is the printing cost if you're full-time, as if you're part-time also. Part-time means you're going to get this, and you won't necessarily be having to answer all the questions that are asked, but some. Everybody this year will have to answer some questions as an enrolled student, and believe me, questions, if you thought last year questions were difficult, we've gone into the second canon this year. They're a bit more difficult, a bit more demanding. But partial enrolled means that you won't have to necessarily read along with us in your own book, but you'll at least have to read this. And since our second canto study guide is, what is it, nearly 400 pages long. So it's practically like reading a second canto in any case. But so we make that differentiation. So we ask, and those who just come to hear, fine, you're welcome, don't feel inferior in any way, but you don't get this. Even if you want to pay it to us, you know, pay the price to us for it, we will not give it to you if you do not sign the list that you're an enrolled student. In other words, we know who you are, we know where you are, we get your retina scan and all of that.
You didn't mention blood type?
Blood type, yeah, all those things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you get a chip implanted in the back of your head, so we know where you are at all times. So if you don't, you know, that's only for, I'm just joking. If you don't want to be any kind of official student, fine, you can come in here, but please don't bother us by coming up at the end of the class, could I have one of these nice, because we will say, unless you're, you see, if we sell you one of these, it means you're an enrolled student, and you'll have to sign up, and that means you'll be expected to come here to get credit, and there is, what do you call it, daily, what's that term?
Continuous assessment.
Continuous assessment, you know all these fancy terms. Continuous assessment. So if our continuous assessment of you as even an enrolled student is that you're not really that serious, you're not coming, you're not taking the tests, then you'll be asked to please unenroll yourself. You're welcome to come in here, but don't try to count yourself as a student just because we give out such nice study materials. And you will be asked to return the study materials too. Of course, you can go make a photocopy and all of that. We can't control that, but anyway. And so there's that. The second canon study guide, unfortunately, because Preeti Vardhan, who did this printing, he considered this inferior, although, you know, it rates with a lot of stuff, you see, handed out. But he was not at all satisfied with this last night. And he didn't want to do the second canto study guide to this quality, so we'll have that ready by next weekend. It's anyway going to certainly take us a week, 4 days, mm-hmm. to cover this. So by next weekend we'll be offering you a very nice 370-something page study guide of the second canon. Very nicely bound up to Preeti Vardhana's, you know, ultra fanatic Czech standards. And that's going to cost you, this is only going to cost you 30 rupees. That is going to cost you, well, the price is not clear, might be as high as 200 rupees. So I'm just letting you know. somewhere between 130 to 200 rupees. I can't say because Preeti has to print it yet. He's looking, he has to find a printer who, you know, satisfies his very, very high qualities. I don't know if all duties have been worked out, if we have now a secretary, but last year we had our dear Kasi Raj Prabhu, who happened to, if you remember him, since that time, he, as we brahmacharis used to say back in the good old days, he put up the white flag. He's now in Grihastha Ashram and in the somewhere in the Ukraine, we can put it that way. He is somewhere in the Ukraine, and we're not sure if he's ever coming back. Although sometimes he writes he will, and other times he writes that he won't. Anyway, so I think it would be good. I was actually thinking of Shanti Parayan Prabhu. You've been such a supporter of our program, and you know, you're so dependable and so together. If you could, you remember all that remembers is that all that means is after the class you just kind of sit here, and when people come to enroll, sign up, or you know, along with it, buy these things that you have on them there. You take their names, you give them their literature, you answer any, so to speak, mundane questions they might have, like when's the next time we meet, etc., etc., etc. So,
I remember I was talking last year, so.
Okay, you know the ropes. Oh, it would be great. Thank you very much. Let's give a big hand to you. All right, I only took advantage of that sort of practical note you were talking on. This is a Srimad Bhagavatam class, not a current events class or analysis of what's going on in Mayapur class or, you know, passing the hat around for donations class. So please continue, Mara.
Okay. So is that basically means this was the idea was. The fundamental underlying principle of the Bhagavat is that we are ourselves transcendental, we belong transcendentally situated, but we are conditioned, and that's a fact that we have to address. It's, in one sense, not a big fact, it's only as big as we ourselves personally make it. Does that make sense? In other words, mundane life is only as important as we make it. Otherwise, it doesn't exist. This whole place belongs to Krishna. It's all for Krishna. And except for the wayward human beings, everything else in the creation does exactly what Krishna says they should. Right? Birds fly, dogs bark, fish swim. You know, they're all doing what they're supposed to. Does that make sense? Like that. So, therefore, how important it is to us is how important it is for us to address it. You know? That's
all that synchronicity. How important a thing is according to how important we're prepared to address it. And then your phone rang and you turned it off. So obviously that telephone call was not important. Is that what you're trying to say? That's called synchronicity. That's a
principle of
Jungian philosophy, by the way. If anyone's interested.
Are you saying others should follow
something
suit?
Is said, and then something happens that goes illustrates what was just said. You know, something in the natural world just suddenly happens.
Yeah,
which kind of underlines what you were just talking about. Uh-huh. There it was.
Okay, so depending how much important it is to you, to that much effort you have to put into it. Does that make sense? In other words, you can chant and you can chant, go to the temple program, read, do stuff like that all day, and that's all you have to do, right? That's what Prabhupada gave in the beginning. If you can do that, that's best. But if you find that there are material desires that are there knocking on the door, then if it's actually important, then you have to open the door and address them. And if it's not important, leave the door shut, but then don't fall into that trap. You know, don't later on say, oh, well, this Krishna consciousness, this, that, blah, we have to be real. No. Real is, you have material desires, take care of it. Right? Who told you not to? Right? Does that make sense? So, the point is you take care, but with the idea of pleasing Krishna through it. That means, therefore, in line with the Shastra, in the mood that the Bhagavatam is giving, that it's somehow or another you connect it to Krishna. You're doing it because it pleases Krishna. The difference is between the Vedic and the Bhagavatam is that the Bhagavatam, you do it because it pleases Krishna. Krishna wrote the Vedas, therefore that's followed as part of pleasing Krishna. The Vedas are, you follow the Vedas, it's pious, it's good, it's nice, it's proper. But not necessarily to please Krishna. So that's cheating. Following the Vedic literature is not to please Krishna. That's cheating. So even worse, not following them and not pleasing Krishna, that's you know, downright disgusting. Whatever, but you know what I'm saying? Like that. So that thread is there through the whole Bhagavatam. That's why it's in the invocation. It's an important element. That when you see all these stories, these aren't just stories. You can say, okay, that's a Prajapati. Those are the grandchildren, great-grandchildren of Brahma. It's got nothing to do with me. No, it's got everything to do with you. Whether they're living on the side of the road under a plastic sheet, or they're living in a palace in the heavenly planet, the interaction between husband, wife, parent and children, friend and friend is exactly the same. The experience is the same. There's no difference as far as rasa goes. Right? So it does deal with us. That's why it's here. Bhagavatam wouldn't waste our time giving us stories that had no relevance to us. So all this time is, oh, that's 5,000 years ago, or that was 100 years ago when Prabhupada's here, or even an even better one is, well, in the 60s, you know, people were more enlightened, but now times have changed and everything. All these kind of things don't... Bhagavatam is eternal. It works eternally. And the concept that something is modern is simply the mundane conception of the individual. Modern does not exist. Right? Just like we say, darkness is absence of light. Right? We don't say light means no darkness. No, darkness is defined as no light. Right? Just like an atheist is someone who's not a theist. It doesn't have its own term. You can't define someone who doesn't believe in a supreme on its own. It's in comparison to someone who does. Right? So in the same way, then... Oh man, I forgot what I was talking about.
Modern.
Yeah, modern... Modern simply means it's not in line with Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. That is the Shastra definition of modern. Modern means it's not according to Shastra. Bus. That's all. So when you just, even though everything here is going on by the Vedas, you decide yourself not to follow it, then you are a modern person. And you are living in a modern perception. So everything around you is run by Krishna. So modern is a personal disease. It's not a fact. Right? So, therefore, this is what is being thrown out here in these first verses, so that when you do study the rest of it, it means something to you. Krishna goes to Dwarka, Krishna interacts with the Pandavas, you know, all these different things are going on. It's real for us. It's not that, oh, these are nice stories, and that's then, and it's really good, and when I'm more, you know, how you say, emotional, or, you know, enthusiastic and hearty ball, then it's great, but, you know, when things get tough, and the bills come in, and the kids are screaming, and the wife's freaking out, and like that, then okay, then I gotta get real, you know, so, no. It means Bhagavatam's teaching you how to get real, because as it is, Maya means we don't know what's real. Does that make sense? Yeah? So we're just saying this so it's clear that what we go through here is relevant to us today, because the Vedas are today. Modern just means, Veda means it's today, it was yesterday, and it's tomorrow. Modern means I don't connect to the Veda, therefore it's not eternal, therefore I have what I'm doing now. But the funny thing is I claim now, but my consciousness is in the future or the past. Though I claim to be now. But the Vedas are, you are now, and it takes into consideration the future and the past. But you actually are experiencing the present. Right? That's why Gita says, what's night to the introspective sage is day to the materialist. Because the day thing, the materialist thinks modern is happening, but actually it's just the absence of Vedic. Right? Does that make sense?
Where exactly are you now?
Just to this spot of paragraph. Yeah.
Is it all right?
Yeah, please.
Thank you, Maharaj. So continuing with the text of the study guide just after the quotation on page 2. Srimad Bhagavatam is rare among religious texts in another way as well. The first way being what Maharaj was just explaining, that this kicking out of Kaitava Dharma, which means kicking out that Dharma Artha Kama Moksha is the meaning of religion. And inasmuch as Prabhupada is pointing out here, inasmuch as people may even understand the Vedas that way, and they may be strict followers, they may be brahmanas, pandits, and know so much shastra, but if they think it's this, what's called chaturvarg, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, if they think that's the be-all and the end-all of dharma, then kaitava, they're cheaters. And Bhagavatam rejects them. That's the first point. So, Bhagavatam is rare among religious texts in another way, you see. We're still talking about the second verse, but the second verse brings out different points. So this is another important point that's in the second verse. So, and that other way is that the vastu, or the substance of reality, this is the traditional dictionary definition of vastu. There is also, as Prabhupada translates it in the second canto, where he's actually referring to what we talk about in ISKCON as vastu, the placement of things. He says that's the active, a translation that says something like the active placement of things of value or something like that. Mm. So in other words, where you're dealing with vastu, substance, but this is a science of how to arrange substance to get the best out of it. But the actual term vastu itself just means reality, the stuff of isness. So the substance of reality, whatever that is, because modern scientists don't know what it is. You know, modern scientists have broken matter down to such tiny particles that they cannot be perceived. They can only be thought of mathematically. In other words, modern science today has crossed from gross materialism into subtle materialism.
Which is funny, because they still say unless they can perceive it.
Yeah, they have all these interesting things, they just, you know, these tidbits they teach you, seeing is believing. But in actual fact, modern science, quantum physics, for example, where it is now, is simply that if it works out mathematically, then it's real. But mathematics is a thing that goes on upstairs between our two ears. It's an activity of the human mind. So, in other words, the modern scientists are unable to distinguish between, you know, an ordinary materialist will say, this is vastu, this is the substance, and this is me sitting here. But they can't tell the difference anymore. They don't know where one ends and the other begins. Because they study, that's what happens, that's what Maya does to you when you try to study her so closely. You just end up, you know, that famous ancient figure of the snake with a tail in its own mouth swallowing itself. That's modern science today. So, but in the Bhagavatam, the substance of reality is from the very start presented in sharp detail. That vastu being what? The delicate, I should have said sweetly scented, lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. That is vastu. In a song from Sharanagati, number 3, by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we read, Tua pada, bishritya amara jantrana. All my anguish and grief have been brought on by forgetfulness of your lotus feet. People often ask devotees, so what is the artha, or what is the value, or what is the goal, or what is the purpose? Why do you study this Bhagavat Purana? What's the point of it? With extraordinary clarity and conviction, Maharaj Prithu answers this question in Bhagavatam 4.20.23. There is a most wonderful symmetry, because, you know, you may wonder, why am I suddenly jumping into the fourth canto? Because there's a wonderful symmetry between what Maharaj Prithu says there and what is being said in the second Mangalacharna. So I just wanted to point, this is called Sangati, that's the principle of Sangati. That this is one of the ways we establish truth in our presentation, is that we bring in evidence from other places in the same Shastra, if it's Shastras like Bhagavatam, spanning 12 cantos, huge 18,000 verses, or we can bring evidence from Bhagavad Gita or Chaitanya Charitamrita or other Shastras that come to the same conclusion. That's Sangati, that strengthens our conviction in the message. So, there is a most wonderful symmetry between King Prithu's answer and the second verse of the Bhagavata Mangalacharam, Srimad Bhagavatam 112. We will briefly consider it in this summary. First, King Prithu's answer to the doubt whether there is any value to studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, remembering that the vastu, this is very important, keep in mind, the second verse establishes that the vastu are the lotus feet of the Lord. So here he says, my dear Lord, your lotus feet are the cause of all auspicious things. Now that refers to the first verse, the sambandha, janmadyasya yataha, that the lotus feet of the Lord are the cause of everything, the source of everything. So that means everything is connected, Krishna sambandha, to Krishna's lotus feet. There is nothing that is not under the shelter and or authority. In other words, you can be a devotee who considers to have Krishna's lotus feet on your head to be most fortunate, and you're just in ecstasy, or you can be a demon, or sometimes there are devotees who take on the characteristics of demons because they're so eager, like Kaliya and Maharaj Bali. All they really want is to get Krishna's lotus feet on their head, but he puts them on his head as if he's punishing them, you see. But he does that to the demons. He does actually punish them. Like Hiranyaksha, he just gave him a kick with his lotus foot as Lord Varahadev. All the demigods were praying, please, they were so frightened of this demon, and the Lord was having a drama of fighting and sometimes dropping his club and, you know, acting like this is real difficult. And then the demigods were going, please, Lord, just kill him. We can't stand this suspense anymore. Oh, is that what you want? All right. Then with a casual whack with one of his lotus, whatever you call them?
Hooves
that the Varaha walks on. He just dispatched the demon. He fell over dead. But as long as the Lord's foot was in contact with the demon, it appeared as if he was alive. So that brings in the middle point, maintenance. So the Lord's lotus feet are the cause of everything. They're also maintaining everything. So your lotus feet are the cause of all auspicious things, and then he goes on, maintenance is taken as a kind of given, And he goes to the destroyer of all the contamination of sin. That is looking ahead at the third Mangalacharana, the Prayojan. Because once your heart is cleansed, you've achieved the goal of human life. Because then there is no static. Prabhupada compares the heart in the second canto to a transcendental internal television set in which you can see, actually visualize directly Lord Krishna's pastimes. The trouble is that our TVs don't work. Or they're tuned to the wrong station. Or something, you know how it is sometimes, the aerial goes off. I don't know if any of you of our generation, we remember and Dad grumbling had to climb on the roof and move it around and call, "Is it better now?" "Yeah, Dad, it looks great." "Okay." And he screws it and comes back down. So somehow the television antenna in our heart is receiving static or weird ghostly signals or whatever. So the Lord's lotus feet are this destroyer of all inauspicious things, which means anarthas. Anarthas, anartha nibriti means that all that is obstructing us in our relationship, face-to-face relationship, Prabhupada would always say, is removed. And that is also by the same lotus feet of the Lord. And then we can just we can see Krishna directly. We can, Prabhupada very often used to tell us, pointing to the deity, "He will talk with you. He will talk with you. Do not doubt it. He spoke with Sanatana Goswami. He will talk with you." But the heart must be, all anarthas, all unwanted contaminations must be removed, and that is done, as Maharaj Prithu says, also by the Lord's lotus feet. "I therefore beg your lordship to bless me by the association of your devotees." Now, is this suddenly what they call a non sequitur in logic? Has Maharaj Prithu suddenly jumped to some other subject that has nothing to do with what he was talking about before? Now I'm going to open our class to questions. To discussion. I want an answer to this question. Who can answer this question? Is it some incredible quantum leap of logic that he's gone from talking about the Lord's lotus feet to the Vaishnavas? Associating with Vaishnavas, this is totally inconsistent, totally, it just doesn't fit together, there's completely illogic, or can anyone here see some logical connection between the two? We'd like to see a hand raised and some brave soul venture an answer. Yes, David? Yes. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale. This is the prayer we offer to our spiritual master, that he is fixed at the lotus feet of the Lord and therefore is very dear to him. So if you want to attain the lotus feet of the Lord, you have to go through the Vaishnava. And what does that mean? How do you enter into the company of Vaishnavas and be accepted by them, and be welcomed by them, be loved by them? I'm again asking a question.
Service!
What a wonderful answer. Yes. And therefore, I'll give it away already. The second verse is I don't know if it's already been mentioned. I don't think so. The second verse is the Abhideya verse of the Mangalacharan. The Vastu is the lotus feet of the Lord, where we must take shelter. And we take shelter by serving those lotus feet. And how do we do that? We serve the Vaishnavas. You must come into the association of Vaishnavas and stay. You see? Even if the Vaishnavas with their lotus feet kick us in the head, we must prepare, and still we must remain their servant. You know, the attitude, as long as the attitude is one of service, then that is actually the artha. That is the whole artha of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the whole point, the whole thing we want to achieve. As we shall see, even more than Prayojan. Even more than Prayojan. That's one of the great, great mysteries of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. What sets apart the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy from the other Vaishnava sampradayas, their philosophy? Well, they pretty much go for simply sambandha, because they stress so much Vedanta's, Vedanta, their acharyas, Vedanta, Bhasya, Ramanuja's, Sri Bhasya or Madhva's, Tattva Vad Bhasya, or the Bhasya of Vishnu Swami. It's pretty much concerned with Sambandha. And then, who's concerned with Prayojana? Well, yes, the gopis are concerned with Prayojana, but they're with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. So I'm going to say something you may find shocking. You run into anyone here in the material world whose main concern, you know, whose main whole, main motivation in Krishna consciousness is Prayojana, you can be sure that he belongs to one of the 13 Apasampradayas. You can be absolute. Do you agree with me, Maharaj?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they're
in other words, he's not talking about Sambandha, he's not talking any philosophy. He's not concerned with defining what is service, defining what is association, establishing that in a proper way that will please Krishna. He's saying that it doesn't matter. The holy name Lord Chaitanya gave so that we will get love of God from it. So all we need to do is chant, get love of God. And in fact, if you smoke a bidi as you chant, that's showing even more faith in the holy name than those foolish, Gaudiya Vaishnavas who are so concerned with their rules and regulations of, you know, following Rupa Goswami's nectar of devotion and all of that. That's all Vaidhi Bhakti. But we are Raga Bhaktis, or we are Prema Bhaktis, actually. You see, so anyone who talks like that, you can be quite sure he's a Sahajya. So although, as you will see, Prayojana is very much a concern, because that's what the third verse is about. It's very much a concern. There's no question of attaining the Prayojana or love of God without Abhideya. So the Abhideya, the central, it's like the hub around which all other aspects of Bhagavata Tattva revolve. It's a central axis. So he goes on to pray that your devotees who are completely purified by worshipping your lotus feet and who are so merciful upon the conditioned souls, I think that your real benediction will be to allow me to associate with such devotees. That's what it means to take shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. Indeed, within a few more chapters of Canto 1 of Srimad Bhagavatam, His Divine Grace will make this remark about the arrival of the great Mahabhagavata devotee Sripad Narada Muni, whose purpose is to instruct Srila Vyasadeva about the compulsory need for correct knowledge of Bhagavata in human philosophy. In other words, he's come to instruct him about his service to the Lord in writing the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada says, this is from the fifth chapter of the same canto, "We are sure, therefore, that everyone in human society will welcome Srimad Bhagavatam, even though it is now presented with so many faults, for it is recommended by Sri Narada, who has very kindly appeared in this chapter." So when you read the Srimad, well, this is the study guide, Srimad Bhagavatam. And I don't mean to say because I wrote it, therefore it's none different. I wish I had a Srimad Bhagavatam of Srila Prabhupada, but I don't. I'd like to hold that up and show you, but I have only this. So, anyway, in other words, the Srimad Bhagavatam is in itself devotional service to the Lord, manifest in this world. That's why Prabhupada used to say about one great demon in America years ago, he used to deprogram devotees, so to speak. You might recall that term, deprogram. And one of the things he used to do is take Prabhupada's books and rip them up right in front of the devotee's face. And Prabhupada, hearing about that, being told about that, he commented that he will get a human birth in his next life for having touched my books. So, you know, Prabhupada's books are so powerful, we have no idea. And they're actually Abhideya Tattva. They're actually, because you can only approach them by rendering some service. You have to read them. As soon as you read them, your mind, because chanting or speaking, the production of sound, anahata, like in yoga, they have the anahata chakra, which is the heart chakra. And there's meditation, silent meditation upon mystical sounds and mantras in the heart that they do. It's called anahata, means unstruck. Because it's not... am I correct?
Anahata means...
yes. Yeah. It's. I have to check with our pundit. I'm not talking some nonsense. So this is not sound that you can hear with your ears, you see. But that's where sound begins. So just to have this, look at Srimad Bhagavatam and read Srimad Bhagavatam, that's already seva to the Lord and to His pure devotee. And Prabhupada says here to Narada Muni. And of course to Vyasadeva. Therefore we offer in the beginning of Bhagavatam our obeisances to Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and behind him is standing Narada Muni. So just to read the front cover of Srimad Bhagavatam is already rendering seva. You know, to Krishna, who is the incarnation, the very incarnation, this is his Granta avatar, and to Krishna's devotees, to Krishna's lotus feet, because Bhagavatam begins there, doesn't it? First canto, where is first canto? It's at the lotus feet of the Lord. So, the time has come to end the class. So, we will continue tomorrow then on page 3, nearly in the middle with the paragraph that begins Bhagavatam 1.1.2, still talking about the second verse. We've put the most emphasis on the second verse because it is the Abhidhyaya verse. Maharaj, I think, has explained to you that what you're getting here is, first of all, a summary of the first 18 chapters of the Canto 1, because we went over those chapters in detail last semester. So now we're just reviewing, just to refresh your memory. We come to the last chapter. That's the beginning of our study. And then we will go into Canto 2, get ready for that, because it's like on Star Wars, you know? Okay, enter into hyperdrive. We pull all the switches for hyperdrive, and the study of Canto 2 will be quite a bit more challenging than our very gentle study, introduction to Canto 1. I do want to warn you about that. After all, as I told you, the study guide for Canto 2, which is 10 chapters, and Canto 1 is 19 chapters, but the study guide is 4 times bigger than the one for the first canto. Goes into great, great detail and many philosophical issues. Very difficult things. But if you stay with us and go through it, I guarantee you that some of the most difficult questions you probably haven't even thought of, but or questions that when you've read Srila Prabhupada's purports, you've scratched your head, what does this mean? I guarantee they're going to be answered in our second canto study, answered to the nth degree, leaving no stone unturned, calling in Chandogya Upanishad, calling in all kinds of Vedic sources, just to drill these. I mean, the Bhagavatam is in a way a very simple shastra. Why? For the reason that Maharaj was talking about, it's just straightforward. It's just straightforward. Get rid of the 4 kinds of cheating which make everything so complicated, because they're still involved with modes of nature, and just aim at serving and loving the Lord. So in that sense, it's very simple. But the philosophy that gets you to that point is the most complex philosophy there is, whether you talk about within the Vedic context or any context. It is far more sophisticated than Upanishadic philosophy, Vedantic philosophy, philosophy of the Tikas of the Acharyas, far, 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 far more deep, because it is meant to engage the thing that is the hardest thing of all to engage in Krishna's service. You know what that is? It's this big bloody sponge. We like to keep in the shell of bone, we call our sponge. In other words, we call our skull. In other words, the brain. The brain is the most difficult thing to engage in Krishna's service. And that is one of the aims of the Srimad Bhagavatam, to involve you so much in Bhagavad Katha from so many different angles, lila kata, but then also instruction kata and tattva kata and all these things, and kata that is telling you what is not true, you see, and going about it different ways, what's called the shakshad artha way, direct, means direct shastric statements that you should memorize. But then there's also paroksha artha, doing it in a poetic, indirect, this is for the poets. And as a fact, the whole story of King Paranjan is not to be taken literally, Srila Prabhupada says in this purport. It's not something that historically happened. It is an allegorical story told by Narada Muni. But count the chapters of the Paranjan story. Count the chapters, how many chapters that is. Look at Prabhupada's purports, how important he says that this is. It's all paroksha artha. So all of that is there. You see? Shakshad artha, paroksha artha, aparoksha artha, adhokshitya artha, aprakrita artha. All of that is there. So thank you very much. There's really not much to be done at the end of this class, I think. I'm not sure what we're ready to do. It enroll anyone yet or not? Do you know, Maharaj?
Wouldn't have a clue.
Oh, you wouldn't have a clue. Okay. So just take this as, like in a university, the first class is just sort of open to everyone so that you can see if you like it. And if you liked what you heard today, then please come back tomorrow. And then we'll have a talk with Shanti Parayan, and we can get the practical things rolling, you know, enrolling you, getting you a study guide and all that sort of thing. All right then, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srimaya Purdam ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari.